Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. There's another great show in store for you today. We're going to look at the Ryan pick. Do you think it will help or hurt the president? Also, we talk about Chavis Carter. If you haven't heard, this is the incident where a young man was shot in the head while handcuffed in the back of a police car. In our sports segment, we look at the LA trade and, of course, the redemption of T.O. But first, the Ryan pick. Mitt Romney's decision to tap Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan as his vice presidential nominee could dramatically shift the campaign from one about Obama's record and Romney's biography to the huge policy divide between Democrats and Republicans over how the federal government should spend and raise money. Now, here's what the grill had to say. By selecting Ryan, Romney closely associated himself with the author of a controversial budget plan which would dramatically overhaul the federal government. Ryan, as head of the House Budget Committee, has called for big reductions in taxes about health correction for both wealthy individuals and corporations, and turning Medicare into a program in which each senior citizen gets a voucher of several thousand dollars to purchase their own plan instead of the current government-operated program. He would make Medicaid a block grant program where each state could set its own rules. Now, under Ryan, corporate taxes would be about 25% instead of 35%, and the highest tax bracket for individuals would be also about 25% instead of 35%. He would also cut trillions of dollars in government spending, like reducing funds for education, health care, and transportation at a much faster rate than Democrats have proposed in order to balance the federal budget. The Ryan vision is a dramatic departure from what the president is proposing. In his second term, Obama wants to raise taxes on wealthy individuals to fund increased spending in some areas of education and infrastructure, and continue implementing Obamacare. which expands Medicaid and sets strict rules for states on how they use the program. Democrats, including President Obama, argue Ryan's proposal constitutes social Darwinism and would benefit the rich at the expense of people who rely on Medicare, Medicaid, and other programs. The Ryan pick comes with major risks and rewards for Romney. On the positive side, Ryan would rally the GOP base, which has embraced the congressman for his bold, conservative budget plan. And unlike Donald Trump, Sarah Palin, and other conservatives the Tea Party loves, Ryan does not have a controversial personality and is unlikely to hurl attacks about the president's faith or birth. Also, unlike Palin, Ryan is well-versed on most policy issues and unlikely to worry independent voters by not being able to say which magazine he reads. And the 42-year-old Ryan could help the GOP appeal to young voters. Now, at the same time, it's not clear which voters Ryan brings to Romney who are not already conservative-leaning. Even though Ryan hails from Wisconsin, he's never won a statewide race there and doesn't guarantee Romney a victory in that state, which Obama won in 2008. Ryan's strong conservatism will help Democratic rally their base, and a ticket with two white men does little to address the concern that the GOP is not in touch with an increasingly diverse America. So I pose the question to you. Does the Ryan pick help or hurt Romney chances? What does this say about Willard Mitt Romney's decision-making process? Now, since a lot of Republicans were hinting at Paul Ryan anyway, does this speak to Mitt Romney's being a puppet? In other words, has all the money the few people have donated to his campaign, is that starting to pay off by this Ryan pick? Now, let's take a look at what the Wall Street Journal op-ed had to say. And in the Wall Street Journal, you know, this is a pretty conservative kind of lean paper. And there was a lot of comments. And we're going to go to those in just a few minutes. But in the journal, it says, when these columns asked last week, why not Paul Ryan? We had no idea that Mitt Romney would choose the Wisconsin congressman as his running mate. So much the better if he had already made up his mind. In choosing the 42-year-old, Mr. Romney has embraced the GOP's reform wing and have made it more likely that the election debate would be as substantial as America's current problems. Vice presidential choices rarely sway electoral outcomes, but they do reveal something about the men who make the choices. As Mr. Romney's first presidential-level decision, the selection speaks well of his governing potential. He broke free of the stereotype that he is a cautious technocrat by picking Mr. Ryan, a man who has offered reforms that the country needs but are feared by the GOP consulting class and much of his own party. Mr. Romney is signaling that he realizes he needs a mandate if he's elected, which means putting his reform ideas before the American people for a clear endorsement. He is treating the public like grown-ups, in contrast to President Obama's focus on divisive and personal character attacks. The Ryan choice also suggests that Mr. Romney understands that to defeat Mr. Obama, he will have to do more than highlight the presidential's economic failures. He must also show Americans that he has tangible, specific reform agenda that will produce faster growth and rise in incomes. Mr. Ryan is well equipped to help him promote such an agenda. The seven-term congressman grew up in the GOP's growth wing and supply side ranks as a protege of Jack Kemp. Far from being a typical House Republican, he was a dissenter from the Tom DeLay Doolittle Congress in the last decade. He began talking about his reform blueprint in the George W. Bush years, when everyone said he was committing political suicide. Ignored in 2008, his agenda began to look prescient in 2010, and Mr. Obama's policies produced persistently high unemployment, the slowest recovery in decades, and exploding unsustainable debt. In 2011, Mr. Ryan won the battle inside the House GOP to take on entitlements, including Medicare, The budget showed the courage of Republican reform convictions and helped smoke out Mr. Obama's insincerity on spending cuts and budget reform. Now, of course, this article sparked a lot of comments, and I would love to hear what you have to say. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side of the break, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. Again, the Ryan pick. Do you think it's going to help or hurt Mitt Romney's bid for the White House? We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jamal. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
need a new website, haven't figured out your social media strategy, are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines. But first, I'd like to bring on my co-host. Now, some of you know that Gema is the premier co-host of this show. I introduce the some and present the others, Gema Hill Cook. Gema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. So let's get right to it. Paul Ryan, the GOP presumptive nominee vice presidential pick. Now, of course, this did not shake up too many of the GOP, but what do you think it did for the Democratic side of the race? How does this pick affect the Democrats going into November?
Well, what it does is that it keeps the president focused on what he has already accomplished and what he intends to accomplish if he's reelected, in terms of the help for the middle class, because as we know, the one thing Paul Ryan is known for is his Ryan budget. And as we know, that budget speaks volumes to cutting programs that are near and dear not only to the middle class, but to the poor and the working class as well. And then on the part of seniors in terms of Medicare and what that's going to look like, the cuts he wants to make to those systemic programs that really have sustained us through some pretty hard times. So I think it's going to be a hard sell in this economic climate to say you want to get rid of something that so many people are now using and so many people have come to rely on. It would be different in times of prosperity where you may not have to spend so much in those social service type programs, but you have more people now on food stamps, not by choice, but because by the fact of what they're bringing home from their jobs is not enough to help to sustain them. So they need some assistance in that area. And so you're talking about food stamps, you're talking about Medicare in terms of the seniors, you're talking about educational issues. Those things are really going to ring to the middle class, who is paying already more than what non-middle class in terms of the upper class is paying. So I think it's going to really help the president to focus in and laser in, as well as any other Democrat that in the past had been running away from the successes of this president. Now they're going to find themselves running to it and wanting to embrace it.
You know,
Care being the main one, so
you know,
for sure.
So that makes sense for the Democrat side. So let's now switch to the Republican side. How much of you do you think this pick takes the eye off of Mitt Romney? Because obviously, when you look at the polls, there was a 52% of registered voters said they would support the president, and only 45% that was backing Mitt Romney. And so these polls begin to climb, and President Obama's favor over the last week with the gaffes, the numerous gaffes he's had, his terrible trip overseas. So, and he even said earlier that he wasn't going to wait to the convention to announce the VP pick. But he all of a sudden, you know, weeks out before announcing this, how much do you think this now shifts the focus off of him into the VP candidate?
I don't think it shifts it at all, because Mitt Romney is still the top of the ticket. Mitt Romney is still the one running for president. So at the end of the day, it's still going to be about Mitt Romney and what Mitt Romney's record is that he tends to run away from. He never talks about his time in Massachusetts, and the sad part about it is I think he probably may have done some good things there, but he doesn't spend a lot of time talking about that particular record. But then when you talk about the record he wants to talk about, the Bain record, which is not how he wants you to talk about it, then he has a problem with that. So I don't think it's going to upset anything. Those people still will have the same feelings about Mitt Romney that they did before, because it's still about Mitt Romney running for president. It's not about the vice presidential pick running to be vice president, because you're only going to be vice president if your candidate wins. So it's still going to be about Mitt Romney. He, you know, and of course, they'll get a little bump this week because that's what happens when a VP announcement is made. But, you know, it's nothing for anybody to panic over. It's nothing for anybody to lose any sleep over. At the end of the day, I want to see Joe Biden in a debate with Paul Ryan, and I want to see the three debates with President Obama against Mitt Romney. That will show you, it will show the world, will show America, the differences between these two as it relates to the plans they have for the America that we're currently in now. They want to take our country back, but take it back to what? We need to deal with where we are right now and not in the past. So, you know, we need to focus on where we are right now and how do we move ourselves forward.
And you know,
that's
but
what's going to be the difference.
Here's what's interesting to me, though, that since the VP pick, Mitt Romney is not the person that the media is asking questions about. And in fact, everything that I hear since this election was about Ryan, his budget, you know, Medicare as the topic. You know what his background is. The Wisconsin. So everything, the conversation has shifted towards more Ryan and less on Mitt Romney, which means that he gets a little bit more traction out of this VP selection because, you know, we're not going to be talking about Romney's taxes. We're not going to be talking about his overseas bank accounts. We're not going to be talking about the fact that he doesn't have a plan, right? Everything that over the last several weeks and months and Sundays has always been about the president. He never talks about his plan. And now bringing on Ryan, he has an opportunity to talk about a plan, but it's not his. It's Ryan's plan. So, again, I bring that question up to take a look at him, Romney, that is, trying to get a little bit more runway towards the president's election without having to talk about his taxes, without having to talk about his plan, because he doesn't have one.
Right, and I'll say this, and I'm going to have to step out for a second. I'll say this in terms of what you're just stating. The problem is that's going to be short-lived, because I guarantee you the Obama administration and his surrogates are not going to give up on Mitt Romney and his taxes. I guarantee you that they are not going to push the brakes on that. So he is going to have to continue to talk about it. If at no other time, it will happen during the debate. People are going to still want to know. If he doesn't handle this, and he'll go into his convention in a couple of weeks and get another bump coming out of the convention, that's fine, as will the president. But after those conventions and it's time for debate time, that is when the rubber is going to hit the road and people are going to be focusing in on not only what you're saying, but what have you done in the past? What has your policies done for America in the past? That is the question. And so although right now we're talking about Paul Ryan and him being the new star of the party and all that, that's fine, that happens. But I guarantee you, because it works so well, it would be foolish for the Obama camp and campaign people to stop pressing Mitt Romney. It would be foolish. They must keep their foot on his neck and keep pressuring him about his taxes, about Romney Care, about his offshore accounts. All of that stuff is important. Not that anybody has any issues against people being wealthy or people being successful, but let's talk about what your role is going to be in helping all of us have access to that. That's what's important, that we be able to have access. And they're cutting off access when you're limiting funds to education. You're getting rid of Head Start. You're taking people's money out of Medicare. All of those things, you're limiting access. You're not giving people access. And once people start seeing that, I think that the choice will be real clear.
Outstanding, outstanding. Okay, so let's shift now a little bit into for the listening audience out there about what is Ryan all about, right? I mean, you know, we hear a lot about the budget, we hear a lot about what's going on, we hear a lot about this. So let's take a breakdown of who Ryan is and what he's all about. Let's take an opportunity to look at that, right? So here's an article in the Washington Post, and it says, a look at where Republican running mate Paul Ryan, a congressman from Wisconsin, stands on a selection of the issues. So let's take a look at the budget. Where is Paul Ryan on the budget? You hear a lot of people talk about that. Well, the article says that Ryan is the primary author of conservative tax and spending blueprints that Republicans on the House approved over Democrat opposition in 2011. And again in 2012. His plan would transform Medicare into a program in which future seniors would receive government checks that they could use to purchase health insurance. This is very, very important, because when the Ryan pick would have been, in best case scenario, a pick that would bring on a constituency like women, or a constituency like minorities, or a constituency like elders or seniors. But it seems that this pick was more or less to take that away, because I think there's opposing views on this issue of this Ryan budget plan that was proposed. And then there's a really heavy debate on how it affects Medicare. So whether you like it or not, I think that it is consistent that the fact that there will be a change to Medicare. Now, if you're talking about introducing a program in the future where seniors would receive government checks that could purchase health insurance, well, that means that the health insurance would be now managed in a capitalistic manner, you know, and it becomes a supply and demand. Here we are, you know, taking a real sharp a turn in our healthcare programs where we're trying to even out or make it consistently across the board where people are provided services and not taken off because of pre-existing conditions or taking off their parents' health insurance until their age of 26. You can now go out and get preventive care without paying copay. I mean, birth control now it can be done. So all of these things, benefits are being offered, and now we're trying to take the seniors in a different direction altogether. It also says that other elements of the budget plan would cut projected spending for Medicaid. These are two critical components that have been in place for a long time and has been doing really well, and people are very pleased about this program. But here it is. The Ryan budget plan says he's going to do two things. He's going to transform Medicare into a program in which future seniors would receive government checks that could use to purchase health insurance, and other elements of the budget plan will cut projected spending for Medicaid, which provides health care for the poor, as well as food stamps, student loans, and other social programs that Obama and Democrats have pledged to defend. In all, it projects spending cuts of $5.3 trillion over a decade. $5.3 trillion in cut to food stamps, health care for poor, student loans, and other social programs. This is the Ryan pick. Why would he pick such a person that removes another major constituency of the presidential election? Obviously, when you looked at the statement that the president made on gay and lesbians, he pulled in that base. Obviously, the things he did for African Americans and their support, he's had for many, many, many moons. And now what he did for Latinos a few months ago. And now the very few people that were remaining were women. Of course, they're now more likely to vote Democrat in this election because of what the policies of the GOP and what Mitt Romney has come out and said on many occasions. And now, finally, seniors, the most dedicated block of voters, the most consistent block of voters that exists today and has existed for years, decades, centuries. Seniors, the GOP is now seen to be pushing seniors away by stating that they want to transform Medicare and propose budget cuts to Medicaid. I just don't see how 90% of the nation can vote in the GOP election. I cannot see how Mitt Romney's or Paul Ryan's policies can benefit 90% of the American public. 90% of the American public. I don't understand how they could not be voting for President Obama. 90%. There is nothing about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's plans that can affect 90% of America. They're only focusing on the 2%, and the other 8% is by default. So I would expect this election to be about the 90% of the American population that are eligible to vote to be on President Obama's side. There is nothing over the past year that the GOP has presented remotely resembles anything that's going to support the American people. Nothing. And yet, here we are. Paul Ryan has been selected as the vice presidential nominee. Mitt Romney has said that he supports the Ryan budget plan. Again, $5.3 trillion of cuts over a decade and would cut future projected deficits substantially. It also envisions a far-reaching overhaul of the tax code. See, let's see what it talks about Medicare. He wants to plan more like a 401k that steers future retirees into a private insurance plan with fixed payments from government. Again, Medicare. Paul Ryan wants a plan more like a 401k. Ask yourself, what happened to the 401k over the last 4 years? Right? When the Republicans were in office, and when they took over, and then President Obama had to take this catastrophic situation that we were in, 401ks over the last 8 to 10 years in its entirety, and four, they're starting to recover. But the last 8 to 10 years, the 401ks have been cut in half. That's why a lot of people that they're in the workforce today can't retire. Their 401k has been cut in half. And here we are trying to mimic a plan for Medicare, something that as you get older, you're going to use more often because of, I mean, here I am, you know, over a certain age, and I'm starting to get ailments. So I know as I begin to get into my senior age, I will begin to use my my benefits more often, more regularly. And now you're talking about using it as a 401k. What happens if they cut? What happens if they treat them like a market and all of the dollars that were lost in the stock market in the 401ks, now you don't have any health benefit? That's a risk. Why would you want to risk your life on such a thing like that? And we know how these corporate institutions are. They're about money. They're not about helping the people. They're about helping their bottom line. Again, here's what Paul Ryan offers. He wants a plan more like a 401k that steers future retirees into private insurance plans with fixed payments from the government that may or may not cover, as much of their cost as does the current program. Again, this is in the Washington Post. I did not make this up. This is published in the Washington Post. He would also gradually raise the eligibility age from 65 to 67. Ryan would turn Medicare over to the states. States' rights. Does that sound familiar? So what is he saying on guns? Of course, Ryan, like most GOP, is an outdoorsman who has a top rating from gun rights groups. He voted to protect gun manufacturers and sellers from lawsuits stemming from misuse of guns. He also voted to shorten gun purchase waiting periods from 3 days to 1 day. To shorten the gun purchasing waiting period from 3 days to 1 day. We just had two major incidents. Of course, everybody remember the one in Colorado, and then just most recently with the Sikh temple. But he wants to cut that waiting period down from 3 days to one now. How can you do a thorough background check in less than 1 day? We're already having trouble doing it within three. What does he stand on Social Security? Remember, people, this is the Paul Ryan that Mitt Romney. This is your choice. There is a clear choice in this election. Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney, against the current administration, President Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Mitt Ryan on Social Security. Ryan has said poor seniors should receive more targeted assistance than those who have ample opportunity to save for retirement. As a part of the solution to the program's long-term insolvency, he's spoken favorably of proposals to grow benefits for wealthier retirees more slowly than for others. Ryan has also backed the idea popular with Republican lawmakers to let future retirees invest a portion of their Social Security contributions privately, putting their Social Security funds at risk to the market. And we know the market, how the market treats us. What does Ryan stand on gay rights? Ryan has voted against allowing same-sex couples to adopt and opposed repealing the ban of gays serving openly in the armed forces. He also has voted twice against hate crimes protecting for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And he's voted for a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. Again, for the life of me, I just cannot understand how Mitt Romney selected someone to not pull in any of the constituencies that I talked about. Gay and lesbians, African Americans are minorities, Latinos, women. Now he's pushing seniors out. So this just goes to show you where the Republican Party is going. Now, again, I said months ago, I want the Republican Party to give me something to reach for. Give me something to hold on to. Give me something that I would make me want to vote for a Republican. But time after time after time, they keep coming against policies that will help the American people as a whole. Most people want to do the right thing. Most people want to work. Most people want to earn good wages. Most people want decent health care. But yet, every time they open their mouth, they're trying to cut something from the American people. The richest nation in the world can't have a program to help their people. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So where do you stand on this? Does the Ryan pick help or hurt Romney's chances? What did they say about Willard Mitt Romney's decision-making process? Since a lot of Republicans were hinting at Paul Ryan anyway, does this speak to Mitt Romney's being a puppet? I haven't heard an original idea out of Mitt Romney since he's been running. Everything he does, he just goes right behind the president and try to mimic what he does. Now that he's picking picking Paul Ryan, he is going to get an opportunity for the next several weeks not to talk about his taxes, not to talk about his money in all over in different countries. He's not going to have an opportunity to talk about what his policies are, what they would be. You know, what does he stand on major issues? We don't know. He hasn't told us one thing about himself. All he does is talk about the president. And we all know the president has done a great job. Absolutely wonderful job. At any rate, we need you to weigh in. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take another quick break. And on the other side of the break, we're going to take a look at some of the comments from the Wall Street Journal article. Ooh, they're going to rev you up. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to Kanye Brings with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gmail can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gmail. And Ask Gmail says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're full service, Interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, of course, most of the debate has been around the social programs with respect to the Ryan pick. And the article in the Wall Street Journal editorial page of the op-ed was really kind of laying down the groundwork for a Ryan pick. It says, in choosing Mr. Romney is betting that Americans know how much trouble their country is in and that they will reward the candidate who pays them the compliment of offering solutions that match the magnitude of the problems. Of course, this article sparked a lot of comments, and I would like to hear what you have to say. But I want to talk a little bit about the comments that this Wall Street Journal op-ed had to say. And I want to get you to weigh in on these comments. And they're pretty right-ended, if you will. Here's an article. Here's one of the writers. Writers said that even if it's Romney Ryan don't make it, they can clearly state the case against Obama and his terrible policies. Then when these predictions do come true, the GOP can capture both the House and the Senate in 2014 and the White House in 2016 with Romney again. It will clear the stench that is the Democrats out. What do you think about that? Is this is President Obama's policy so bad? I mean, they've really done a great job. I mean, he's killed Bin Laden. I mean, he's done a lot for the American people. I don't understand where these comments are coming from. But I think it's important to get both sides of the argument and listen to what people have to say. Sometimes we get so caught up in listening to the left-wing stations where they just make sure that they talk all the great things that we hear one side is saying, but we never get an opportunity to hear the opposition. And here's some of what the opposition had to say. They say that, and I'm sure that the Republicans will actually work with him to find solutions just like they have recently. The Democrats had complete power of the first 2 years of Obama. They passed that utterly monstrosity of a healthcare nightmare on a strictly partisan lines. Obama's idea of working with Republicans is nothing but soundbites, rhetorical rubbish. And the most divisive, partisan, take-no-prisoners president in many a year. In fact, Obama is trying to make this a campaign theme. Things aren't better because the Republicans refuse to work with me, i.e. to pass my legislation. So don't you even dare think you can try to play the let's all work together game. We now have adults in the game, and the vicious soundbites of the Obama cult are quickly going to start sounding like merely childish excuses, which in fact they really are. Another comment says, actually, it is demonstrably false that Mr. Ryan would end Medicare as we know it. Moving to a voucher system sounds great until you realize what a health care policy for a 75-year-old would cost. A healthy 65-year-old would pay around $12,000 a year in premiums today, and a person in their 70s with diabetes and high cholesterol. Get real. And then the response to that article was, Bessie, you are ignoring the portion of the premiums that the voucher would pay. If you want to get real, you need to look at the whole proposal, not just part of it. It would also be useful to give some thoughts to the idea that the only way to truly bend down the cost curve for healthcare costs is for healthcare consumers to have some skin in the game. If consumers are paying a portion of the cost, they will actually care about the cost of the healthcare they are consuming. If consumers are provided with comparative costs and quality of care information, they can make wise choices. The resulting competition will favorably impact healthcare costs. Or you can continue Medicare just as it is and watch it go broke in a decade or so. what a choice. Sensible reform or kick the can down the road and ignore that there is a problem. I know which approach I prefer. You know, this is a good debate, and this is what the debate probably will take your turn over the weeks and months to come, is about what they call these entitlement programs. And the fact that we're the richest nation in the world and we're giving subsidies to oil companies that brings in billions of dollars every quarter, not year, but every quarter, it is not the conversation that most people are having. They're talking about mainly Medicare, Medicaid, and food stamps. Because the government is subsidizing these programs or providing funds to fund these programs, this is the major part of the debate, not the fact that they're subsidizing oil companies and a lot of billionaire companies, and the fact that these companies are not paying taxes. So they're getting money from the government and then getting all of the tax breaks and not paying back into the government. This is the main problem, as spending is really spewing out of control, not the fact that people are in some cases in a condition not to provide for themselves. But if you listen to the GOP in most cases, and most people that is of this school of thought think primarily that the funds are strictly going to the poor and people that could work but don't work. I'd like to get you to weigh in on this. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room open out there. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/currentevents. And we already got a live chat going on out there in the chat room. And you also can send us a tweet out on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll read your tweets live on the air. And also, of course, Facebook. And that's Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, there are other articles out there that are comments out there are talking about this Wall Street Journal article, which I think is a good read because it gives you a different side of the argument. And most people that are leaning left or what they call progressives, in a lot of cases, like to cater to or listen to progressive arguments. And I like to kind of take both sides of the argument, take viewpoints. And as I said many times on this station, is that I would love to see or hear from the GOP that would offer some sensible solutions. You know, I had a caller call in several weeks ago, and he talked about vouchers for the education program and saying that, you know, giving a parent a choice to a school system is a great idea and a great program. But what a lot of people that of that school of thought fail to realize is the fact that if you're, no matter what school system that you're in, and if you have you take a bad situation and put it into a different school system, doesn't make that situation better. I mean, it doesn't make the fact that the child is still hungry. It doesn't make make up for the fact that the child is not getting proper tutoring at home or tutelage at home because his parent may be working two jobs and not have, and just to make ends meet. It doesn't take the fact that they're in a bad neighborhood, you know, because they have to be, they're faced with violence every day. They're faced with, you know, a very impoverished surroundings. So just because you take a child out of one school system and put him into another school system doesn't make that child perform better. And in fact, if you take care of the child's needs, well, I just talked about food, a safe environment, where they have someone to help them out after hours on their homework and science projects and PTA meetings and things of that nature, then you, whatever school system in it, that child can potentially perform better in that system. So the GOP always look at the data, but the tangible components of the social programs, but they never, or they fail to, in my opinion, look at a lot of the intangibles associated with their program. You hear Newt Gingrich all talking about putting kids in school at work as opposed to having a janitorial system. You hear him talk about most African Americans are on food stamps. You hear all of this nonsense, and they fail to realize what are the real problems of the neighborhoods. The fact that they don't have you know, don't have employment in some situations, or are uneducated because of other issues. I mean, so there's a plethora of healthcare problems. I mean, there's a plethora of issues that are associated with not performing well. And so, again, I always invite the GOP to come in. Give me something to latch on to. Give me a good argument that would make me want to participate or want to be a part of the GOP. Give me an option, because right now I don't hear an option. But I'm not opposed to another option. I'm not opposed to the GOP. I would just like to hear someone present an argument to me that makes sense. Taking Medicare and Medicaid away doesn't make sense to me. Provide me with the data and the right argument to say that this is the case. You look at the voter ID problem. You know, the fact that there is no problem, the fact that there's no evidence of the problem, but they continue to persist in taking away people's right to vote. Again, there's nothing about the GOP that presents to me an argument that makes them attractive to me. And I'm asking for somebody on that side of the aisle to kind of bring me over, right? I would love to hear what they have to say, but there's nothing presented right now that remotely resembles something that's going to govern to put me in a better situation. And that's why I go back to my comment about 90% of America. 90% of the American people should be voting for President Obama this time. When I look at all the constituencies and I see all of the policies that President Obama has put into place, there is no reason for me not to believe that 90% of the population would not be voting for President Obama. 90% of the people or the policies that the president has put affects the people, 90% of the people. The other 10% or the 2% really, that Mitt Romney speaks to every time he talks about giving tax break to the riches and all of the policies that have helped them, it doesn't help the 90%. So I don't understand when I see this comment is, you know, when this comment says the only way to truly bend down the cost curve for health care costs is for health care consumers to have some skin in the game. And the fact that they're saying to take away the health care. A vote for Mitt Romney is a vote to remove your health care plan. That's how I can see it. He said it numerous of times. This is not my word. He's going to try to repeal Obamacare, right? The Affordable Care Act, President Obama put in place, Mitt Romney said he wants to remove it. So a vote for the GOP is a vote to remove my health care. That's how I look at it. I'd like to get your comments. 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a break here shortly. But before we do that, I want to get you to weigh in. Do you think Mitt Romney's pick of Paul Ryan was a good choice? Do you think that this is going to buy Mitt Romney a little more time to not have a discussion about his tax records? Do you think this is going to allow him an opportunity to slide through November? Because most of the journalists, and I put that in quotations because I don't know how much journalism is going on these days. They might as well just get a blog to a radio station like me and sit next to me, because they're not really doing any effective journalism, if you ask me. And CNN, I don't know what they're doing. They have really turned the corner over the last several months. I've heard a couple of interviews over the last couple of days, and they were leaning so far right, I thought they was going to tip over. You know, they're supposed to be down the middle. They're definitely moving away from that. But at any rate, I digress. The fact of the matter is, when Mitt Romney selected Ryan early, in my opinion, as opposed to waiting to the convention or closer to the convention, is that he was trying to remove the focus off of his taxes, right? They're not going to be asking questions about his taxes anymore. They're not going to be asking him anymore about his Swiss bank accounts. They're not going to be talking about his policies. Now, although he is at the head of the ticket, as Jima indicated, so eloquently indicated earlier, they're not going to be talking about they're not going to be talking about Mitt Romney's taxes or his policies. Everything is going to take a turn to breaking down Ryan's budget plan. Everybody know how horrible the Ryan budget plan is, right? Yeah. We know it's going to take care. We know it's going to remove Medicare and Medicaid. So the three things that's going to happen if they get into the White House, Romney and Ryan, is you can guarantee no health care, no Medicaid, no Medicare. You can pretty much guarantee that is going to be gone, right? Romney already said that he was going to, you know, he's going to go full in with the Ryan budget plan. He's going to repeal the president's Affordable Care Act. So one can conclude, or one can infer, that if you select Romney and you select Paul Ryan, then you're selecting to not have any health care. Now, we already know, and you look at this country, the obesity rate. We already know the high rate of cancer amongst all seven continents. United States is up there, probably in the top tier when it comes to cancer and healthcare problems. But yet, they want to remove the most important thing that's going to keep us healthy, is going to keep us focused on our health issues. They want to remove it. And what's the alternative? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about the fact that they remove health care and they remove Medicare and Medicaid? What is your alternative? Is it going to be just left up to the rich people? Only the rich people in the United States will now be able to afford health care. They're going to make it like a 401k. How many of you have a 401k right now? How many of you know what a 401k will do for you? So the majority of the American people don't have a 401k, and if they do, they know what their 401ks have done over the last 10 years. And you're telling me that you want my Medicaid or Medicare to be just like that? You're telling me that you want to repeal Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act because it's now providing me benefits that I never had before? You're telling me that now the insurance companies cannot deny me because of pre-existing conditions? You want to take that away? How is it that the GOP is getting more than 10% of the American vote? I don't understand it. Nothing that they've said so far. Nothing that they've convinced me of, that is, could remotely resemble me supporting that candidate. But I'm begging, I'm asking, I'm pleading them to give me something to vote for. I'm not so against voting Republican. I'm not so against listening to the GOP and the ideas that they have. But I am against them taking things away that I know that I paid into. I pay my taxes. And the taxes are going towards funding these programs. And so you're telling me you're going to take that away. 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. I need you to weigh in on this. So is it the case that a vote for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan is a vote to repeal all your benefits? Is that the case? 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. 323-580-5712. It's time for another break, top of the hour here. You know, and I really have been looking for a reason to really get with the GOP plan. I thought they had some good ideas early on, but you know, the more I peel back the layers, the more and more I get sick. The more and more I get disgusted with their ideology and their unwillingness to work with the other side of the aisle. The fact that they keep saying that they want to you know, make the president a one-term president, not help the president be successful or help the country be successful, but to make the president a one-term president. That is not a team player. You come in the first day he's in office, and that's what you say? Come on, people. When are we going to wake up? 90% of the American public should be voting Democrat this election. We'll see. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask FEMA, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Point.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
PR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. At Olympic Park in London, the world's athletes are taking their bows at closing ceremonies now underway. So is British Prime Minister David Cameron, celebrating Great Britain for the game's success.
The idea, actually, that the greatest member of Team GB was the British public may have been an advertising slogan, but it turned out to be spectacularly true.
As for the final medal count, Team USA amassed the most medals, including 46 gold ones, the last thanks to the men's basketball team, which in the last 3 minutes beat Spain 107-100. Meanwhile, the British Prime Minister is taking advantage of this final day of the Olympics to focus on hunger. As NPR's Philip Reeves reports, Cameron and several Olympic stars are calling for international action to help the world's poorest children grow and thrive.
Cameron's spending the final afternoon of the Games hosting a hunger summit. A multitude of kids around the world haven't a hope of developing into the kind of top-class Olympians who've been displaying their skills over the past 2 weeks. Their chances are ruined because by the age of two, their growth and intellectual and physical potential is stunted by disease and poor diet. Experts reckon at least 170 million children are right now facing that prospect. Cameron's co-hosting this summit with Brazil, who are holding the 2016 Olympics. They're urging global leaders dramatically to reduce that number before the next Games begin. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
Top Democrats and Republicans squared off on the Sunday talk shows over Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney's choice of Paul Ryan as his running mate. Meanwhile, NPR's Allison Keyes reports Romney and Ryan are on the campaign trail.
In North Carolina, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan was getting much love from the crowd, telling them President Obama came in with so much promise, but...
You know what, North Carolina? We can do better than this. Help is on the way.
Former Republican presidential nominee John McCain told Fox News Sunday Ryan's an excellent choice.
A man who understands the most compelling challenges this nation faces, obviously, are jobs in the economy.
But the president's senior campaign advisor, David Axelrod, told NBC's Meet the Press that Ryan will thrill only one set of GOP voters.
The Tea Party, the social conservatives. I think it's going to be troubling to the mainstream of the American electorate.
He says the president disagrees with Ryan's ideas on the direction of government. Allison Keyes, NPR News, Washington.
A major shakeup in Egypt today as the country's new president, Mohamed Morsi, retakes powers from the military leadership. Morsi is ordering Defense Minister Mohamed Hussein Tantawi to retire immediately. Tantawi is a holdover from the Mubarak regime. Morsi has also revoked constitutional amendments imposed by the military that gave Egypt's military leadership broad powers. Meanwhile, Egyptian troops killed at least six Islamist militants in Sinai after militants killed 16 Egyptian border guards there a week ago. This is NPR. In northwest Iran, the death toll from yesterday's two powerful earthquakes is rising. Iran's interior minister now says at least 227 people were killed and several villages are totally destroyed. A U.S. Navy-guided missile destroyer is sitting in a port in Dubai with a giant hole in its side. The USS Porter collided today with Japanese-owned oil tanker just outside the strategic Strait of Hormuz. No one was injured in the incident, which the Navy says is not combat-related. It's not clear who hit whom. The Chinese government has freed the mother of a rape victim. She'd been held in a labor camp for criticizing the way the government handled her daughter's case. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports the woman was released following public outrage.
Tang Wei's daughter was kidnapped 6 years ago in China's Hunan province. The girl, then 11, was raped and forced into prostitution. However, according to Chinese media, local police stalled the case and it wasn't heard until this year. Members of the prostitution ring eventually received sentences of death or life in prison. But one member, who is related to a police official, got just 15 years. Tang continuously protested outside government buildings, criticizing the police and demanding the death penalty for all. And for that, a local court sentenced Tang to 18 months in a re-education through labor camp earlier this month. The sentence was overturned Friday after enormous national criticism online and in the state media. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Shanghai.
Christian evangelist Billy Graham is in a North Carolina hospital undergoing treatment for a lung infection. Doctors in Asheville say the 93-year-old is in stable condition and resting comfortably. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now from politics to another issue that's very troubling to me. And before the death of Chavis Carter, the guy that was shot while handcuffed in the back of a police car, life in Jonesboro was more like a Mayberry, if you will, than an unsolved mystery. It's a nice place to live until something like this happens. Longtime resident J.W. Mason told the Huffington Post this. He said that Jonesboro, Arkansas, sits not far from the Tennessee border, about 2.5 hours from Little Rock, in dry Craighead County, where bars or liquor stores still are illegal. It's a college town, home to Arkansas State University, and draws students and employees from across the state to the still burgeoning industrial city of about 67,000. Many are working class, employed at one of the local factories like Nestle or Frito-Lay or Riceland Foods. And like many other Bible Belt communities. The hub of its social scene revolves around Sunday morning worship services and midweek Bible study. Black churches serves as the bedrock of the black community, and it's hard to find a black leader in town who doesn't also serves as a minister. In the weeks before Carter's death, there was the normal hullabaloo, a city hall council meeting and local coffee shops over rezoning and property and tax issues. One of the biggest stories in the local paper was the upcoming debut season of Arkansas State University's new head football coach. Any mundane little thing can set a place like this off, said Charles Coleman, one of two African-Americans at the 12-person Jonesboro City Council. But these days, everyone is talking about Carter and what some believe was police cover-up. His death in July, while in police custody, was garnered national attention and left Jonesboro residents wondering what really happened. Police said 21-year-old shot himself while handcuffed and detained in the back of a squad car. Now, for those of you that may be getting a little muffling sound or a little static covered information as I begin to talk about this story, I'm going to read that part again. Police said the 21-year-old shot himself while handcuffed and detained in the back of a squad car. Jonesboro Police Chief Michael Yates calls Carter's death bizarre. He said it was bizarre, saying it defies logic at first glance. Specifically, how Carter suffered his apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound remains unexplained, said at a department statement. An investigation is still ongoing, but Carter's mother and a legion of supporters believe the police may have killed him and are now trying to cover it up. On Sunday, July 29th, Carter and two others were pulled over around 9:50 p.m. in a pickup truck on a residential Jonesboro side street. Someone had called 911 to report that a truck was driving suspiciously up and down the street with his lights off, according to a police report. Officers stopped the vehicle, frisked the three, and found a small amount of marijuana and empty bags on Carter, who they said had initially given a false name. They also found a bag of what they believed to be sugar and an electronic scale under a seat. The two other passengers were released, but Carter was handcuffed. And searched a second time and placed in the back of a police car. Mississippi court records show Carter of South Hazen, Mississippi, was wanted on a bench warrant for an arrest in March after he failed to meet the provisions of a guilty plea on drug charges a year earlier. Not long afterward, police said an officer found Carter slumped over, soaked in blood, and suffering from a gunshot wound to his head. A small .380 caliber handgun among with a spent cartridge were found in the back seat with Carter, who was still handcuffed. The police said the gun had been reported stolen in June. Ye said in a recent statement that witnesses in the police car dash cam corroborate the department's suicide theory. Now, what's interesting is that about the story that is not reported here, that the vehicles were set back to back and the cameras could not see the entire part of the vehicle and the suspect in the back of the seat. Although they're reporting here that they said in a statement that witnesses and a police car dash cam corroborates the department's suicide theory. It'll be interesting to see the footage. But you will note that the footage does not show any signs of any kind of shooting at the time. The FBI has since joined the investigation in Carter's death. The two officers on the scene the night of the shooting, Keith Baggett and Ron Marsh, both of whom are white, are on paid leave pending the outcome of the investigation. According to one of city officials, preliminary autopsy results could be available as early as this week. But Teresa Carter, Chavez's mother told reporters that her son, who was shot in the right temple, was left-handed. She also said Chavez called his girlfriend during the stop and told her that he called her from jail, which his mother called odd behavior for a person minutes from suicide. My son was not suicidal, Carter told the TV station in Memphis. Carter could not be reached for an interview for this story. The newly formed Craighead County branch of the NAACP joined the state conferencing in calling for a thorough outside investigation into the death of Carter, who was black. The public relies upon police to serve and protect all citizens, no matter their race or ethnicity, the NAACP said in a statement. Now, Pastor Perry Jackson, the president of the local NAACP chapter, said, has lived in the Jonesboro for about 8 years. Jonesboro is a good place to live, he said. We still have our issues that we're trying to work out, but I know what's going on in the community, that people are coming together. Hopefully, things will get better. Now, I want you to get you to weigh in on this. How could a person handcuffed behind their back take out a weapon and shoot themselves in the head? Now, granted, let's say, worst case scenario, that the guy had a weapon in his pocket, right? A 380 is small. If you know anything about handguns, now, obviously, the police said that they searched him not once, but twice. Not once, but twice. And the fact that they handcuffed him and put him in the back of the car. Now, granted, let's say, hypothetically, he was able to maneuver and get the weapon. But shooting himself in the head would be a hard, almost impossible feat itself. I don't care how flexible you are, you cannot defy physics. And it's plain physics. His arm could not reach his head and not shoot. I mean, his left-handed is not be. It's just impossible to do. So the question remains, what really happened to this guy? What really happened to Chavez Carter? Here's another bizarre incident. And more of these African Americans getting killed, more and more there seems like there only be two sides of the story, where the other side is the dead guy. What is going on in our society today while these black men keep dying with these unexplained situations? This is more than odd. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. What do you think happened here? How is this guy? And if you're sitting at home or you're walking around the mall and you're listening to the show, I want you to put your hands behind your back. Simulate having a handcuff. Simulate trying to put yourself in a situation and where you may be able to reach in your back pocket, true enough. You may be able to put something in your hand, but how will you shoot yourself in the head? That's the question. How can you possibly shoot yourself in the head while handcuffed? And the police obviously had to admit, because, you know, the guy here is laying with all his blood in the back seat. And they already released the other two witnesses. So the people know he was in the back seat. And all of a sudden he's dead. And somebody's going to wonder, how in the world did he come up there? So they had to come up with some kind of reason or excuse or some kind of explanation, whatever you want to call it. But for this young man to get shot in the head while handcuffed in the back of a police car where he had already been searched, and you know, like I know, when they search somebody of African-American origin, they're going to do their due diligence. And for them to search him twice and not to find any weapon, and then all of a sudden he gets shot in the back of the vehicle, what happened here, people? 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. We're going to bring Jima back on the line. Jima, what happened here?
Well, and I think it's important to note that I believe the other two passengers were white. So why were they released and he was killed? I mean, that's the question. You know, was not a check ran on their name to see if they had any outstanding warrants? Because if I'm not a criminal, I'm not hanging out with criminals, right? So what made them so squeaky clean that they could just be released out in the middle of wherever they were, and he gets not only searched twice, and handcuffed and placed in the back seat of the car. I'm not sure how this happened. I mean, he would have to be a magician. I'm sure David Copperfield is wondering the exact same thing, because it's just not possible. There's no way this makes any sense. And I'd like to know what the coroner's report is going to say. Where is there gun residue on his hand? How close was the gun to the temple? All of that, all of those questions need to be asked and answered in order for this not to be yet another crime that goes unpunished. And we've had, as you stated in your opening, we've had far too many of these for us to continue to just allow them to just go on. I don't care what his record was. I don't care what he did or what warrant he had. That's irrelevant, because he was already in police custody, and they were obviously going to take him down. And what were they doing standing out of the car just chit-chatting anyway? That's what I don't understand. You didn't handcuff me. You got me in the back of your car, and you and this other officer who came for backup just standing outside talking, and now you say you heard something, but you didn't think it sounded like a gunshot. You're a police officer. You should know what a gun going off sounds like.
Not to mention, even in close proximity, you're going to be a victim.
They didn't check on him right away because they didn't think that's what it was. What?
It is pretty much impossible for the scenario to play out as suggested here. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it didn't happen that way. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's no way that that young man could have pulled the gun out and shot himself in the head while handcuffed. Impossible. Because it defies the laws of physics. I know we just landed on Mars. I know we've done a lot of great things in the United States. But for him to be able to take the handcuffs off, shoot himself in the head, and put them back on, it's just impossible. We can't do that, right? And so the question becomes, what really happened? And the convenience of the dash cams, as they indicated, did not capture, because of the, they said they were back-to-back as opposed to being, you know, visible to sort of dash cam can see what's going on.
And what's that all about?
That's my point.
They stopped to pull somebody over.
So I wonder what really happened here. I mean, it'd be also interesting to see what the history of or their engagement. Have they stopped this person before? Have they had interaction with their boy? Do they have any children? Do they have any daughters or sons that he could have been engaged with? You know, these questions, these intangibles that people are not looking into, but I asked a question.
And I'd like to hear from the two that was in the car that was later released. Were they really driving around with no lights on? Were they really stopped justifiably in the first place? We haven't heard from them. Where they at?
Yeah,
what's
exactly
their take
right.
on what happened before they were released? Before they was told y'all walk on or wherever y'all was going. Because obviously he was, I'm going to make the assumption he was the driver. Because then they come back, I think I read somewhere where they said that because of whatever they found on them, they went on and searched the vehicle. So obviously the vehicle was still there. So the two other gentlemen had to take off walking.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that? Why have we not heard a statement from them? What's their statement about why they were originally stopped?
Yeah. Let's take a listen to his mom in the interview. Take a listen to this. Let me get you to respond.
I can't see how.
Teresa Carter just doesn't understand what happened to her son, Chavis, in the back of a police car in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Officers picked him up. They say he had drugs on him and missed a court date on more drug charges. What happened next, though, is where the confusion starts.
As protocol, he was handcuffed behind his back, double locked, and searched.
Handcuffed, double locked, and searched. But somehow, minutes later, police say they heard a thumping noise, turned around, and found Chavis dead, shot in the head in the back of the squad car.
Any given officer has missed something on a search, you know, be it drugs, be it knives, be it razor blades. This instance happened to be a gun.
They're still investigating, but they think Chavis, handcuffed in that squad car, somehow managed to pull out a hidden gun and shoot himself in the head.
What do you think happened to your son?
I think they killed him. I mean, my son was suicidal.
In fact, she says he called his girlfriend while pulled over to say he would call her shortly from jail. Even more, the mother says she was told her son was shot in the right temple when she says he was left-handed. She says it just doesn't add up.
They searched him twice. I mean, I just want to know what really happened. That's all I want to know.
Again, this is weird to me. You know, and they're trying to draw the parallel. If you listen to the stories or the reports or anybody that's reporting it, they draw parallels of the drugs like they did to Trayvon Martin and the fact that he called his girlfriend like they did Trayvon Martin. So you see these similarities, and they paint these pictures of these gentlemen as if they were just bad people. The fact that he had a little marijuana on him, you know, and the fact that he had this drug charge in the past makes him a bad person, right? They paint this dark picture of this individual, and they show this black man with locks in his hair. He's been on drugs. He's been convicted. He's been to court. They paint this picture, and then he's dead, right? So the image of his death is not all that big or large or meaningful because they painted this dark picture of him to be such a menace to society. So what is a black guy get killed, shot in the head by the police? He was already a menace to society, as opposed to painting him as a scholar or somebody that went to college or went to school and graduated, somebody that was doing something positive. I understand that he may have been mischievous at one point in his life, but that's not the picture. That shouldn't be the distraction that's posed against the fact that he was shot in the head by somebody.
Right. I think because of the rash of shootings we've had in the last month and a half, we have to take a look at, and this isn't conjecture, this isn't something that I've made up in my head, this is factual, because when you look at what happened in Colorado, they were quick. I mean, first of all, how long did it take us to even see what he looked like? Man looked like. I mean, it was almost 3 days before we saw a picture. And, you know, normally the first thing they show you is a mugshot, right? I mean, we saw Ocho Cinco's mugshot last night.
Yep. I mean, finally, he was in jail.
Right. And so here we are, you know, when you have and I'm just going to put it out there and say it, and call us, call in if you have an opinion. But here you are, have a case of when the shooter is non-black, non-Hispanic, non-Muslim. You find out all this background information on a whole nother level. So because he was educated, the Colorado guy, then that means something else was wrong. But here this young man is, who has, and he very well may have been educated, but just fell on some bad times. But either way, it doesn't devalue his life. And this is just one more instance where, in my opinion, the life of a black man is devalued to the point that we're not even going to spend a whole lot of time investigating this. And had people not been in an uproar, we probably wouldn't have heard about it.
Had not someone brought
it to national attention, just like with Trayvon, had someone not kept pushing and pushing and pushing, the FBI would have never gotten involved in this case in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And there's no way, I'm with you, you can justify how this happened. Let's say even if when you put him in a squad car the first time, he hid the gun in the back seat. Let's say that. And then when you pulled him out and you searched him again, that's why you didn't find the gun. Okay, but how does he get the gun? How does he get the gun to shoot himself from the back seat of the car?
I've been practicing all night. I still can't figure it out. I don't lean down, lay down, turned up beside her. I'm doing this now, you know, with the hopes that I can find a way to justify how someone with their hands behind their back can kill themselves, right? I've tried it. Several times I lay down on the couch, I turned myself upside down while laying. It's just impossible. Just couldn't do it.
Right. And even the number of us all, even I bet there's not one Olympic gymnast, gold medalist, could do what he did. Not one.
So that begs the question, what happened? What really happened in the back of that car. What really happened in Trayvon Martin? What, we don't ask these questions when there's a non-black being killed like this, right? It seems like to me we get the facts. In this particular instance, we don't know what happened. In the Trayvon case, we don't know what happened. When it involves a young African-American male, we don't know what happens. What is going on in our society where they keep killing our young black men? Do you think it has to do with the demographic numbers about the browning of the United States? Do you think they have a mandate where they're saying we start knocking off young African-American males so they can stop the future of young people of color? What is going on? I don't understand it. I'm not a big person on conspiracy theories, but I just don't know what the answer is.
Well, the problem with that theory is that they've been doing this for a while now. It would be different if these events were isolated and like, oh, once a year or so. But it's not. It's not isolated. It's frequent. And it goes back 20-some-odd years. So it's not as though this is brand new things that are happening. They just seem to be happening more frequently, and or because of our increase in technology and social network and media and stuff, we're hearing about what's happening in small town USA that's been happening all along, but we've never heard about it. We didn't hear about, you know, when you look back to what happened in Sanford, those people in Sanford say this stuff's been going on for years. It wasn't like Trayvon Martin was the first case down there,
yeah.
But because now we have more ways of communicating with one another, we're hearing about what's happening in Sanford, Florida, and Jonesboro, Arkansas, faster than what we ever would have heard in the past. So I don't think that this is new information. This is not new that they have been targeting young black males. It's been happening for at least the last 20 years. And the second part of that is, when you look at where guns are purchased and where guns are sold, they're sold in communities where people can kill each other that look like you and me. So let's talk about that part as well. So there's not an outcry when five or six people get killed in the weekend in Chicago or in Miami or in Philadelphia. Why not? Life is life. And for those people who are so pro-life and so value life, then why do you not value my life as a black person? Why is my life not as valuable to you as to somebody else's life? That's the hard question. And that's the question that we have to begin to ask. And I'm taking this to a whole other level, but when we began to go to the voting booth and we're casting those votes for people, we've got to know that they value everybody's life, not just the life that looks like them or the life that's from the suburbs or the life that spent time in France and wherever else, but they have to value life. And if you value life, since they say they value life from conception, then you should value life while I'm yet living.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Definitely have to agree with you there. So you mentioned the fact that Ocho Cinco was mugshot, was posted 5 minutes after he had a domestic violence charge or the 911 call. The picture of him was up, and it took 3 or 4 days for the person in Colorado to even show a picture of him. So I wanted to kind of shift to the conversation about Chad, right? Now,
yeah.
According to the NFL.com, he was in a domestic violence event, right? He reportedly fighting over a receipt for some condoms that took place. Now, Evelyn Lozada found the receipt in the car as the couple was returning for dinner. She confronted her husband, who allegedly headbutted her. Now, she was treated in the scene for a laceration to the head stemming from the headbutt or the assault or however you want to put it. But she went to the hospital later in the evening. Ocho Cinco claimed their heads made accidental contact during the argument. Johnson was taken into police custody and is expected to be released from the jail today, this morning. Chad Johnson or Ocho Cinco, I think it's back Chad Johnson now, is a Miami Dolphin player and a former contestant on Dance with the Stars. His wife is on the Stars VH1 Basketball Wise. The couple is currently filming their own reality show on VH1. Is this a ploy for the show or is this real, Jima?
what I would say is real, because I don't think Chad would want to have a police record, because that's really going to hinder his ability to get, you know, any other endorsements or pursue anything else he wanted to pursue in the world of football. So I really don't think it's for publicity, but maybe, I mean, and the sad part is they haven't even been married that long. So who needs to go outside their marriage already? I mean, you know, not that you should ever go outside your marriage. I'm not saying that. But they've been married like a little bit over a month. What in the world is happening that somebody needs to go out and cheat already?
Well, I mean, and, they didn't talk about the receipt, but, I mean, it could have been 2 weeks old or 2 months old, right?
It don't matter, though. If I've already committed myself to you, I'm not expecting you to be out. You still cheating? Whether we're married or not, if we're in a committed relationship and you propose to me and we engage and we're on our way to get married, I'm not expecting you to go out and cheat. Now,
yeah, but I'm just saying that the fact that when he purchased them and what the reason for them and all that stuff. I mean, you know, it was just a different of opinions about the condoms, right? I mean, it wasn't like he was doing anything. Just because you buy them, I mean, you use them, right?
Well, what you buying for?
Just, you know,
condoms aren't used for anything else but. I mean, you can't say the same thing about other forms of birth control. But if you're buying some condoms, you're planning on using them. You're not just buying them to have in your drawer.
Well, maybe
in your wallet. But see, here's the thing, though. I thought I read somewhere, and maybe I read some gossip column, I don't know. But I thought they were saying she had purchased the condom. That the receipt was not his receipt, but she was the one that had purchased the condom. Now, that would put a whole other twist on the conversation.
I think
I read that somewhere.
Yeah, it just says, I mean, according to NFL.com, the couple was reportedly fighting over a receipt for condoms when the incident took place. Evelyn found the receipt in the car as the couple was returning from dinner. She confronted her husband, who allegedly headbutted her. So she confronted him. That's what it sounds like.
Right, right. But the thing about that is that from what I read also earlier was that both of them have two different accounts of what actually happened. So maybe the report I was reading was the one from Chad's perspective, and maybe ESPN, because they don't like Chad Johnson anyway, is reporting her side of the story. That could be the case. There might be another site with another story. I don't know.
So,
I read something that stated she had purchased the condom. That was insinuated.
Well, how would that color the conversation then if it would have been hers?
It would the same way. What's going on that you already cheating on your husband? Or that you considered it. Maybe you hadn't done it yet, but you was considering it. Was it the impending football season where he's going to be gone some and you might get a little lonely? I don't know. I mean, what was it? And they, you know, I mean, how they got together was crazy anyway. And the fact that they, like I said, recently got married and haven't been married that long, and already this is something you're facing. And Chad really didn't need this, because he really needed to be playing football. I don't think his best days, you know, are all the way over. I mean, I think they're behind him, but they're distant behind him. And I think he still could have been of value to a team this season. And right now it's clouded, because he's going to have all these off-the-field issues to have to deal with.
Yeah, but what would make a dude – I guess what was interesting to me is the headbutt part, right? I mean, I can understand pushing, I can understand swinging, but headbutting? That's what threw me for a loop. A dude headbutt a woman, you know?
Right, but how many times have you been in close proximity to somebody and y'all bump your head? I seen it just the other day with my son in karate. He and the other guy, they were sparring, and they got a little bit too close to each other, and they actually bumped each other's head. So it happens, right? So let's just say, you know, they're in the car, it's heated fellowship, they're really going back and forth about it, and, you know, they bump heads, and his head a little bigger than hers, and he probably had a little bit more force behind it. And that's it could happen. I mean,
yeah, but I mean,
Patrick,
in a car like that, if
Travis can shoot himself in the head in the back seat of a police car, handcuffed,
man,
then
these
anything
people,
is possible.
These people defy physics. See, ever since the Rover landed on Mars, You know, we define physics nowadays. It just goes to show that anything's possible. I'm telling you. Now, Stan in sports.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about this Dwight Howard situation. Now, of course, Dwight Howard, I'm sure he's pretty ecstatic. He finally got what he wanted. But I wonder what happened with Orlando. It seems like I don't know if they got a good deal out of this. But at any rate, according to NBC Sports and MSNBC.com, it took four teams, 11 other players, five draft picks, and countless rounds of talks over many months. But finally, the Magic decided the time was right to start over with the NBA's best center and to end a saga that has dogged the franchise for what seems like an eternity. Howard is off to play alongside Kobe Bryant in Los Angeles after a mega deal was worked out Thursday and completed Friday after the NBA reviewed and approved the particulars. It was just a very tough situation for everybody to let go, Howard said. I'm finally glad that it's over with. Myself and the Magic organization, we can all start over and begin a new career. Today is a fresh new start for all of us. Jimmy, this was, to me, in my opinion, this was a great decision for all parties involved. What do you think?
I'm not sure what Orlando got off the deal, though. You give away your center, the centerpiece of your organization, and what did you get? I don't even know a player that got traded to Orlando. I mean, I hear that, you know, Andrew Bynum and somebody else is going to Philadelphia, and then Philadelphia got rid of somebody. But I don't remember who Orlando got out of the deal, so I'm confused how this is. I mean, it's good around in terms of starting new and everybody, you know, getting over it or whatever. But if that was the case, then they should have kept the coach if they were going to get rid of Dwight Howard anyway. So why fire Stan Van Gundy if you was going to get rid of, you know, Dwight? And Dwight, why did you want them to fire him if you knew you was going to leave anyway? I mean, see, it's just, you know, I'm not a big fan of Dwight Howard. I think he's, you know, he's soft to me in some areas. He's not a dominant big man. He's just big. You know, he ain't even, I mean, he's definitely no Shaq. Let's not even compare the two. There's no comparison. And he's just not, I mean, you know, who fears Dwight Howard going into the paint? I mean, I'm just saying. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying. LA could use him, yes. And it's going to be interesting to watch down the stretch of the season and a full season for a change. And we'll see how everybody plays out, how well he comes back after his injury and after his surgery and everything. But, you know, I'm not impressed that he's going to LA. I think it's good, you know, Kobe to use some help. But, you know, so it's Kobe, Howard, and they brought in Steve Nash in this offseason. So LA is doing what they're trying to do to win a championship. I don't know what Orlando was doing. Period.
You know,
that's just asinine to me.
So two questions. One, you know, and the reason why I say everybody got what they wanted out of the deal, because I don't believe Dwight Howard was there mentally for the last few years, right? I mean, something went down where it began to put a bitter taste in the house. So I don't believe he was giving 100% on the floor. Now, granted, he was trying, he was doing his thing, but I believe by going to L.A., a few things are going to happen. One, you're going to see him give 100%. Two, you're going to have him working out with Kobe, which we know put in the grind to prepare for the season. And so they're going to have that work ethic. Or he's going to have to put in that work ethic that LA is going to require, or that a championship team is going to require, and the support of the fans is going to require. He can't come in there and not put out 100%, and he doesn't have to worry about doing everything. So it's a great situation. It puts them in a great situation to be able to, A, win a championship, and then we'll be able to see before December, is he a true champion? Does he have what it really takes? Because this offseason, he's going to have to put in the work, and then during the season, he's going to have to put in more work.
And you got the fact of the matter that a couple of the Lakers players are in the Olympics, so their legs are not going to be as fresh as others' legs that didn't go to the Olympics this summer. So you got that to consider because you're already in the middle of August, right? You're almost in the middle of August, and the Olympics just ended. So by the time you get back and get your mind right, it's time for you to get ready for training camp, right? You know, get your mind ready and get in condition and stuff. So Dwight Howard is going to have to come, as you state, with his A-game, A-plus game. And the one thing that irritates me the most about Dwight Howard is he's such a whiner. And when you're in L.A., you don't have time to whine. L.A. is a big stage. It don't matter who they playing, the lights are always on in L.A. And so he's not going to have any opportunity to have any of that downtime and away time. And he's going to get his head on. He might even go get some therapy, go sit down and talk to somebody about why his heart wasn't in the game when he was in Orlando. But because when he gets to L.A. and the lights come on, he better be ready to play. Bottom line, it's not up for discussion. We really don't care about your feelings. This is we here to win. And if you cannot do that for us, then, you know, they will let you go.
Yeah, and I think we'll see that within the first year. You're going to see right away he's going to have to step up to the plate or he's going to be nixed. And then if you can't play in L.A., you can't play anywhere in the NBA. So you're not going to leave L.A. and go somewhere else and go to a big-ticket team if you can't perform now. You got the best program in the NBA, and you got one of the all-time greats playing with you. Two of them, Steve Nash, too. So there's no way he shouldn't be successful in his program. So we'll know right away. It's because it's going to be incumbent upon him to put in the work now to be able to reap the benefits later. I want to ask you about a comment that Kobe Bryant said, and Kobe Bryant said something about having Superman back in L.A. And I want to know: do you think that was a dig at Shaq by saying that?
Well, only if you think Dwight Howard is Superman. I mean, but who believes that?
Well,
Kobe called him Superman.
He
and Dwight
about
has
it.
Called himself that on occasion, and I'm not real sure what made him think he was the new Superman, because nothing is better than the original. So let's just put that out there. So you might call yourself Superman, but we know the best Superman in the NBA was Shaquille O'Neal. So, and the original is always the original. So anybody that comes after that, you trying to fill somebody else's shoes. Go make your own shoes and then become somebody. That's how I feel about that. So, of course, it was a dig. And I'll be glad when Kobe and just get off to whatever happened with him and Shaq, because that was probably in another decade. When was that? I mean, you know, it's just like seriously what you're talking about, whether or not Kobe and Shaq get along. Who cares? And Kobe needs to grow up and handle his business, because he's on the downside, too. We keep forgetting Kobe came in out of high school. So he's been in the league for a minute as well. He ain't no spring chicken. So,
yeah, that's,
you know,
why,
his legs and he injured, you know, a finger this week or a toe or something. He'd be having little injuries, but, you know, after a while, something's going to happen. So he needs to get it in while he can, too.
You know, and that was his comment. His comment was more or less about the franchise bringing in Dwight Howard as the future of L.A. as opposed to, you know, Kobe, because he's on his way out. I mean, that were some of the implications in what he posted on Facebook. But it was just interesting to me that he said, well, it looks like Superman has found a home. The Lakers landed a piece that will hopefully carry the franchise long after I'm gone. This is what Kobe said on his Facebook page. So I was wondering, A, was he trying to take a dig at Shaq by saying the Superman thing? Because we all know how Shaq feels about Dwight Howard being called Superman, and the fact that the relationship between Kobe and Shaq is kind of scarred, to say the least. So that's why I asked the question.
But and then I know you're going to move on, but just on the second point, let's not play like Dwight Howard is an injury prone either. So I don't know how you're going to build your franchise around somebody that's just coming off of back surgery or whatever surgery he had. So, you know, I hope the Lakers, you know, are really thought about this, because, you know, not to put nothing out on anybody or nothing like that, but I would be surprised if Dwight made the whole season. I really would be surprised if he played the whole season without some other injury. I would be surprised.
Well, and, you know, you talked about Kobe aging. Let's talk about the people that are aging in football, right? We We talked about Ocho Cinco. I got to call him Chad Johnson now. I think he changed his name back or whatever. But the fact that Chad Johnson, Randy Moss, and Terrell Owens will be going back on the field this fall. What do you think about that? They're aging as well, right? I think Owens is the oldest of the three. But it looks like they're going to be coming back. Is this redemption for these guys? Is this their last leg? What do you think?
Yes, I think it is redemption, and I think everybody deserves a second chance. And in Terrell's case, it's been like 3, 4, 5 chances. But if Terrell can come in and produce, Terrell is a hell of a football player. You can say what you want to say about him, but when it comes to work ethic, I mean, it's his stuff off the field that irritates you 9 times out of 10. But when Terrell shows up to training camp, he's in training, he's ready to go. And so Seattle saw that, and Seattle wasn't crazy. That, you know, because they knew after the word got out that he ran, what was it, a 4.2? I can't remember. But whatever he ran, after the word got out about that, Terrell, he would have found a home somewhere. If it wasn't Seattle, somebody would have picked him up. Because you don't run that at his age. That means you're going to be able to produce for me on the field. And that's what it's all about. It's all about production. And if they could just take their medication or go sit on somebody's couch once a week or every day during the season or whatever to keep themselves on an even keel so that they, you know, can maintain themselves and be ready to play on Sundays. That's all anybody is concerned about. I'm concerned about the mental health and things that happens life after football. And I would love for them to be able to make the money that they need to make to take care of themselves and their families and their kids, because we all know Terrell's baggage with, you know, all that stuff he's done, being on Dr. Phil with babies and baby mamas. But I would want them to be just as healthy and whole life after football. And so how can all this work together for that to happen? So I think it is redemption. I think they all have something to prove. I know Terrell does. I know he has something to prove. And I hope he gets an opportunity to do that in Seattle.
Now, you were talking about T.O. He actually ran a 4.43 and was only 0.07 slower than the fastest time ever registered at the NFL Combine this past offseason. So, and I think they got Travis Benjamin of the Cleveland Browns ran a 4.36. So the fact of the matter is, Terrell has always had the work ethic. He has always been in tip-top shape. Now, granted, the things that you talked about that off the field, but I believe, you know, at his age, well, he's 38 years old or something like that, some along those lines. He's older than most, and so he should at some point have matured, and all of the stuff that you go through in life, at some point you have to put that down and says, look, it is now time for me to do this. I only have so many more years left of remaining on what I can do. Because physically, again, you know, we're talking about the final law of physics. I'm only going to be able to do so much. This may be Terrell Owens' best year ever recorded. What do you think?
I agree with you on that, and I'm hopeful because I like T.O. I'm probably like in a big minority of people that actually like T.O., but I like T.O. because I know there's something underneath all of that other stuff, and so that's why I always root for him to do well wherever he goes. And I think when you talk about maturity, and I think the fact that last season when he didn't play, that was a sense of humility for him. He had to humble himself and really put himself out there. I mean, to go on Dr. Phil and put all your business out there on Dr. Phil is one thing. And then you playing in some arena football league making $30,000 or whatever it was when you've made millions. I mean, he's done, you know, things that you would probably hear a rookie come out and say, I'll never do nothing like that. And I'm sure at some point in Terrell's career, he probably said, I'll never do nothing like that. But you find yourself in a position where you've got to take care of yourself, not to mention having to take care of all the other responsibilities you have. So I'm hopeful that this is a good year for him and that he's able to get himself back on track and that he proves all the naysayers wrong. And that's why I hope that during that time that he was that hopefully Dr. Phil gave him some help and gave him some numbers to call and when these things happen, so he'll have an outlet to go and handle it as opposed to doing it the way he's used to doing it.
So what about Randy Moss? Randy Moss is obviously a real good talent, but the NFL is kind of moving away from the long ball, and so that's why I think that that New England didn't keep him that long because they were trying to go to a different offense. So what do you think Randy is going to be able to do, being that people are moving away from that style of play?
Where did he end up at? Do you know?
Let's see. I don't know where he landed. He is Moss is in gay. He's always the most dangerous player on the field. Moss was never won a Super Bowl. He'll be playing for a team that has very realistic chance of achieving that lofty standard. Expect Moss to exhibit razor sharp focus this season as he searches for the elusive ring. He is. I'll find out in a second. Just a second.
Okay.
But what do you think he's going to do?
I have a different opinion of Randy. So I think Randy could do better, but I think he's lazy. He doesn't always put forth, in my opinion, 100% when he's out there. He does just enough to say, I showed up, I did what I was supposed to do, I was on the field. But, you know, I haven't seen him really push himself. And maybe this will be the year he does it, because maybe in the past he hasn't had to. But maybe now with systems changing and schemes changing and you know, defenders becoming faster, you know, he may have to do and push himself a little further. So maybe we'll see something different out of him than what we've seen in the past. So I'm hopeful that he'll give me something to hold on to. I like him. It's not that I don't like him. I like him, but I just haven't always been overly impressed with his style of play, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
but I hope he does. I hope he does a little bit, pushes himself a little bit further.
It looks like Randy Moss is going to the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, yeah, I knew that,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
that'll be a good fit for him. Yeah. Hopefully he can get – and sometimes it's all about coaching and it's all about who the quarterback is as well. And I never thought it was a good fit for him to be in New England with Tom Brady, just because of the type of person I think Tom Brady is. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Just like I think it's going to be difficult for RG3 up in Washington with Mike Shanahan. I just hope he don't break his spirit.
I just hope he don't break his spirit.
Yeah.
All right, we're closing down to the last few minutes of the show. Jimmy, let me get your final thoughts. Let me tell you, baby, we miss you today. But we hung in there. We did it. All right, final thoughts.
Final thoughts is that last week I watched an episode of Oprah's Life Class with Yana Van Zandt, and they talked about having the hard conversations. I think I mentioned it last week. And I think it's important, if you go online to Oprah.com and go back to that show, it's really important for us to sometimes have that hard conversation, not only with other people, but sometimes just have that hard conversation with ourselves about where we are and what we should be doing, and if we're doing all that we have been called and purposed to do. And so I just encourage everyone to, as the eighth, the number eight in scripture and biblical terms is a number of new beginnings. And we're in the eighth month right now. And so we should be looking forward to something new. Where are we ready to go now? We've gotten through all of those things that happened the first part of the year, and we're heading towards the end. So where are you heading? Are you going where you need to go? Have you done all that you need to do? Prepare yourself for where you're going. And so I just encourage people to go and take a look at that on Oprah.com under Life Class and see if there's something in there or someone, including yourself, that you may need to have that hard conversation with. And as always, if you're not registered to vote, if you know someone that needs to be registered to vote, please, please, please register. I am calling out all salons and stylists and barbershops to have voter registration drives at your shops. People come in all the time. We know that. So find a local deputy in your area that would be willing to come out and make sure people are registered to vote, make sure people's addresses are correct, if they've moved, so make sure they've got everything that they need. We want no excuses. We talked about the top of the show about Romney and Ryan, and we know what their strategy is. We know what they've been trying to do all year in terms of suppressing our right to vote. We must be diligent about making sure that we are ready come November. Before November, we need to be ready to head to the polls in numbers that they've never seen before. If they thought 2008 was huge, we ought to make their eyes fall out their head come this November. And the only way we can do that is to make sure that we're registered to vote. That's my take.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter. And that's at Ask Jima, AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.